appointed the DG, who is the accounting officer of the department, to join us. Now, in your absence, I took liberty to allow the DG, in the absence of the minister, to come. The reason for doing that is that we were supposed to have passed the bill last week, because this bill must be passed, as we indicated, by the 31st of March. It will it has to go through, once we pass it as NA, it must go to NCOP, so that the NCOP must pass it, the Parliament must pass it by the 31st of March. So we really operating under some time constraints. I thought that with your permission, we would allow them the DG, because he's here, to address us. The other matter that we have, I'll come back to this one. The other matter that we have in today, we have to adopt our report, the Division of Revenue report, but we'll first have to take the DG on the Additional Adjustment Appropriation Bill, and then take it from there. But I don't know, honorable members, I don't know if there are comments, because the minister is not here. We have the DG. Is it in order that the DG addresses us? Is it fine with you, honorable members?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think actually the bill was referred to us as a standing committee on appropriation, and then as the people responsible for adopting that, as the people responsible for adopting that bill, I think it is our duty, and then we are happy to have the DG here, because the final result will actually come from us. But we are very happy to have an accounting officer with us in case of any clarification. Thank you.
So,
my view is, Chair, then why we have anybody, because this is quite simple. I mean, when I read it, it's fine.
Ramantagana, welcome, and special welcome to our member of the family of finance, Mr. Van Roy. Thank you very much for joining us. Please feel free to participate. You're part of the committee. DG, I think that, well, the committee says it's in order that you can address that. Well, the bill was presented to the committee the other day. But maybe before I come to that,
we request that you present the bill to us and you get our response. And as you say, we are happy to have the DG here.
So, just to recap, honorable members, you would remember that the bill was presented to us. There were questions that were raised, that we thought that the minister would be the most suitable person to address us. In fact, I think that what led to that matter was also the question of the seniority of the people who were addressing us, and hence we asked for the minister to come. The question that we raised amongst others, honorable members, is I remember well, was that we have this intervention by the by government of the 5.75 billion. Now, what was not clear to the committee was whether this was a once-off intervention, because it's not clear whether going forward there will be another allocation. I think that was one main question. There could have been others questions that needed to be addressed. So I don't know if members, before I allow the DG, you would want to add other key questions, or we allow the DG to present to us and then we engage with his presentation. Is that in order? Can I invite members to come and sit in front? We don't want the backbenchers, too many backbenchers. Biji, welcome, honourable member. Biji, you can address us.
Thank you, Chair. My stance from the response I'm sitting here from the initial question is that it would seem that people are broadly okay with the bill. Only because you have then posed one question, let me respond to that question and pause. But I remain available should there be follow-up on the issue. Honourable members would recall that...
Sorry, PJ.
Yeah.
I don't want you to respond to that question. I just want you, maybe, if you have a short presentation, but also to cover this question.
Let me do that.
Because I think that the other thing that led to this kind of thing was the background, how this...
Okay.
I mean, it's a pity that you did not get answers of exactly what transpired in the meeting that led to all kinds of questions, you know. Sure.
Okay, let me do just that. The 5.75 billion... represents which the House requested to approve as an adjustment to the Department of Transport's budget this year, going to Sunrail, arises from a process with quite a long history. The process, in fact, started a while back when there were a number of roads that got reclassified, which moved from being provincial roads and were given to Sunrail. And of course, there were other changes beyond that. But in Gauteng, the roads that were affected are the roads that have been improved are part of the roads, or some of the roads that were reclassified. In other words, from being provincial roads to becoming national roads, and therefore handed over to Sunrail to construct. Now, the history of this thing is so old that, in fact, some people have confused the timing of the decision. It was the decision dates back to, you know, a government before this one. In other words, in Gauteng, an easier reference would perhaps be to say that it was during the time that Mr. Shillong was premier. So the roads were then done. The way in which they were done, the understanding was that, similar to the way in which a road like entry going to Durban, or JP, they would be the part that has been done, I think 185 kilometers, has resulted in a debt for SANRAL totaling around 20 billion. Now, because SANRAL was going to do these roads and take up debt which is way above the debt that they had taken previously. The maximum debt they had taken previously was between 7 and 8 billion for all the other roads that they had done. But this time, you know, just those roads had the debt which was, I mean, three times the amount of debt that SANRAL had ever had in its history of existence. So to give, excuse me, the market comfort, it was decided that SANRAL should be given a guarantee. In other words, government should stand behind SANRAL so that if SANRAL cannot repay for any reason, I mean, which was not really anticipated, but it was just to give the market comfort and also to make sure that the risk premium or the interest rate that they pay on the debt would be reduced. And indeed it was reduced by something like 0.7%. So government gave SANRAL this guarantee. The implication of the guarantee, which is why it's important to highlight it to this house, is that if in just 1 month, or let's say one instance, SANRAL doesn't pay an installment, let's put it that way, then government would be required immediately to pay whatever is outstanding of that debt at that given point in time. Now you can imagine, 20 billion is not, excuse me, a trivial amount. By my calculation, I think that it's about 0.8% of our GDP. So it's of that order. So it would immediately have serious implications, therefore, even for national government. But anyway, so there was that guarantee. Because once the roads were constructed, then there were a whole range of issues that came up. The moment it was announced that the roads are done and the tolling was going to happen, I don't need to tell the committee that the tolling was going to be done through an electronic system. You would have seen if you drive through those roads that they that those five things. They're called gantries, I think, over the roads and stuff. So once it was announced that people should buy their tax and the advantages that go with that, but I'll get to that when I talk about the current decision or decision of cabinet, which has brought us to where we are today. Excuse me. Then different stakeholders made representations, made submissions, raising concerns that the tolls were going to be expensive, cost people a lot, affect the poor, to the extent of even suggesting alternative ways in which this road should be funded. Now, we can get into those if people want to hear about them, but just in the interest of time. Having seen then those submissions, having considered them and weighed all manner of things, including just looking at the impact on the people, in particular the poor. So in other words, if for instance taxis were to pay the toll fee, then it can be expected that at some point they might pass all or some of those costs to the passenger. Same would apply to buses and stuff like that. So having considered that first, but secondly, also having considered the place and role of Gauteng as a province to the economy of South Africa and the revenue sharing mechanisms, to think about it, I mean, Gauteng contributes about 33-35% 9 trillion, over a trillion comes from Gauteng. When you look at revenues that are collected nationally, even more comes from Gauteng, because many companies, even when they have got branches in Etegwini, Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality, you name these places, they tend to have headquarters in Gauteng. So Gauteng contributes even more to nationally raised revenue, which are shared equitably across provinces on the basis of their population, demographic profiles, economic circumstances, and so on. So, in a way, when cabinet looked at this thing, they said, look, this is this improvement in the freeway in Gauteng is going to make the goose that lays the golden egg lay bigger eggs or more eggs. So in a way, it's going to contribute to the upliftment of the economy as a whole and the upliftment of South Africa as a whole. And therefore, there is a case to be made for the national fiscus to contribute towards alleviating the burden on Gauteng's people, because to the extent that the benefit will also go to other parts of the country, it makes sense to use revenues generated from other parts of the country, so to speak, to contribute to fixing the hole. However, even having taken that into consideration, the bigger benefits from the improved infrastructure will still accrue to the people who use the roads, and predominantly the people who live in Gauteng. And I mean, those who have driven between Pretoria and the airport, Pretoria and Johannesburg, can attest to the fact that with these freeways, the time it takes you is shorter, the quality of the roads, and therefore the maintenance on the vehicle and stuff like that have improved. Of course, one of the most important considerations in deciding on roads like those, but especially between Johannesburg and Pretoria, is also that if, let's say, it's paid for differently, then everyone would want to use a good road. And if everyone uses the good road, then the benefit that you get from the fact that it's wider, it has got improved exits and on-ramps, gets lost because congestion starts to pick up again. Mm-hmm. Whereas if there is some fee that would serve the purpose and public transport is excluded, then it must stay cheaper and people would be encouraged to use public transport as an alternative as opposed to using the road. And therefore, you deal with the congestion issue. Now, in other countries, they even have what you call a congestion charge, which is meant to chase people away from roads. Now, here, there is an improvement. We're saying we're doing, trying to achieve two things at the same time. You have improved the road, get the money that you need to finance that improvement from the people who use the road, but at the same time, use that to deal with the issue of congestion. Now, so in a way, then cabinet said, look, it would make sense to make a contribution. The issue then became, you know, how much should the contribution be and so on. The idea was to try and take the tariff down as much as possible. The honorable members would recall that the maximum tariff payable to someone without a tag and stuff like that previously when the road was first mooted was going to be 56 cents. Now, it's important to bear in mind, I'm saying without a tag. But with a tag, which means that if you have bought the tag, you become less of an administrative burden to collect the money from you. And therefore, the cost associated with collecting the money gets lower. Discounts can be afforded. Now, in this case, to cut to the chase, the the tariff payable to someone with a tag with the 5.75 billion contribution from national upfront is 30 cents for a passenger vehicle, for a light passenger vehicle. For a non-articulated truck, it's 75 cents. For an articulated truck with an E-Tech, it's 1.51 cents. Now, so the tariff has been brought. If you just compare to the 66 maximum and the 30 cents to below half. I mean, the two are not strictly comparable, by the way, because one is a tag, the other one is out. But because some people in their submissions were saying that this could add up to, and they were thinking about someone who drives on that road quite a lot, I don't know how many times, but they were worried about the maximum amount that a person may have to pay per month. So the, in addition then to the discount that one gets to end up paying 30 cents per kilometer traveled with a light motor vehicle, government said, look, okay, let's introduce the concept of a cap. There must be a maximum amount. People must know with certainty, if I use the road a lot, and it has to be quite a lot actually, I will pay 550 rand. But before even getting to 550, once you reach 400, in other words, you have used the road quite a lot, and you clock 400 rand, any kilometer above 400 rand will cost you less than 30 cents for the tax. You get a further discount. So that even getting to 550, it's almost impossible, actually. You have to be sitting in a car and driving the whole day, passing through those temples. And then, there is also, to deal with the congestion issue, time of day discount. In other words, if you know that most people are on the road because they are lazy to wake up, let's say, between 7 and 9. If you beat that up and you are there much earlier, or you then decide to go much later, which is usually the times that are kind of off-peak, as people would say in English, then for heavy vehicles, you get 20 cents. So that then means that the truck, the amount that you see here, they can pay less if they choose not to be on the road at the time that most people are traveling. It also adds to the safety aspect, by the way, on the road and stuff like that. So there's a 20% discount on those, the 75 cents I was talking about for non-articulated trucks, and the 151 cents for articulated trucks. Now, let me leave the issue of the options that people suggested, because it can open a whole lot of debate, but if I get dragged into it, I'll entertain it at that stage. So the decision then was, having taken due regard of all of these things, was those things, these things that I'm saying now, which is to make it easier for people to pay and stuff like that, cheaper, set a cab, and so on. But public transport is excluded. So if a vehicle is registered as a public transport vehicle, taxi or a bus, not going to pay anything. So the risk that the cost of the road would be passed to the poor who use, and working class who use predominantly public transport is zero, because there is no cost imposed on them. They just benefit from a good road which is paid for by others. Now, the 5.75, is it once off? Yes, I mean, we've got the medium-term expenditure framework. There is no other amount in it talking to the issue of the road in in Gauteng, the amounts that I've referred to are premised on the understanding that over the life of this debt, the only change that there will be is that to the extent that there is inflation, and we all know that at least prices have got to adjust with inflation. Otherwise, I mean, then you can't keep up with the maintenance of the road because everything that you use to maintain it increases with inflation or even higher, by the way. But in this case, the adjustments in the tariff are just going to be in line with inflation. If inflation is 5% this year, the only increase will be 5%. If inflation is zero, which is highly unlikely, then the increase will be zero. But nothing more, nothing less. That's the only change. So the 5.75 is the amount. Now, of course, there were many useful lessons learned from this. I mean, one of them was that we've got to watch how much debt, you know, Sambal has to take in relation to this road. And it may well be that for similar roads in future, you know, some of these considerations that have come up in relation to this road much later will have to be taken care of much earlier, which is a very useful lesson. But some of these things, you only know them once you have crossed to the other side. The consultation process would have to be strengthened, and I think everyone right across the board agrees with that, that it would have to be improved so that people understand what it would mean for them to have this involved. I think I should pause there, Chair, and only respond to questions you have.
Well, thank you very much. I see I recognize Honorable Singh Sen, Honorable Swap, Honorable Ramakadana. Okay. In that order, Honorable Singh.
Thank you, Jefferson. Sorry I came late. Problems on the road. On the road, which is appropriate to this committee here. But, Chair,
so
you know...
Are you suggesting that we should call this road?
Call this road, yeah. That's what they want to do. Chairperson, we've discussed this matter at IFP at our study group for many hours last night. Many, many, many hours. And having listened to the DG here, where he says there's a case to be made, you know, we realize that Treasury and this government are sitting with a hot potato. They don't know what to do with it. This is the first time I've been here for many years that I see Treasury trying to motivate a case on behalf of another department. Because they saddled with the problem of having given guarantees of this 19 billion rand to Sunrail. And as the DG says, if this doesn't work out, then government will have to pay this money. But when we look at this bill and the need for this money, I mean, one can justify it in any way. It's just trying to make a bad situation less bad. It's going to be bad any way you look at it. And that is our concern, sir. Because the DG speaks about history. And unfortunately, we have to go back into the history to bring us to where we are today. Because today is 5.75 billion, and the DG says, no, well, that's the only amount, 5.75 billion. I mean, in the past, we've had special appropriations. We remember at Denel, I think it was SAA and somebody else, there were special appropriations that were brought before the South. So there's no guarantee that as you move into the future, when the motorists refuse to pay, and then you start charging 100,000 motorists and they all appear in court for not paying the tolls, that we're going to sit with this debt as government from now until the future. And unless there's an alternative way of looking at this, Chairperson, we are not going to say yes to this additional funding to be made available from the fiscus. Because there are lots of questions, unanswered questions. Unfortunately, Treasury can't answer them because this started before their time. There are other people that have been involved in this whole thing. And the DG says, well, you know, if there's a case to be made for Gauteng, then there's a similar case to be made for KwaZulu-Natal when you look at the Wild Coast where Honorable Snell comes from. They want to put a toll road from Durban to down his place, which is 600 kilometers, Jefferson, envisaged. But the bulk of the revenue is going to come from the first 10 kilometers within the Durban area. And that is why Thekwini Municipality have strongly objected. The province of KwaZulu-Natal, as a province, legislature unanimous support, cabinet unanimous support, have objected to that because of this kind of thing. Now, you're setting a precedent here. Because if you set this kind of precedent of Treasury coming and bailing out somebody that in the first instance should have done their homework, I think that is wrong. Which also brings me to the point, Chairperson, of the list of guarantees. I know it's made available, but I didn't bring my budget book. The list of guarantees by government, where government guarantees loans taken by entities. I mean, here's a red flag. The first red flag. Government guaranteed 19 billion rand of SANRAL. And if SANRAL fold tomorrow, government and the taxpayer, not Minister Gordon or the President, the taxpayer will have to foot that bill because they signed an obligation. And there are many other similar guarantees that have been signed. And maybe at some stage as an Appropriations Committee, we need to know, you know, whether these guarantees, whether the people on whose behalf we've signed the guarantees will honor the obligations that they have made in borrowing from international sources. I'll stop for this. But this is a big elephant in the room.
Yeah. Honorable Singh says there are many questions. But I would endeavor that you ask this question so that we don't say that there are many questions and these questions are not asked. BG must say, I'm not able to answer to that question, but let's ask this question so that... And even this question of what you call, I would like you, Peter, to respond to this question of these guarantees to the parastatals, I'm sure you're referring to the role of government to that. So you're fine for now.
Yeah. Okay, if I can ask one specific question, I'm sure my colleagues might follow the last question. I mean, when this agreement was entered into, I mean, we say, now we're trying to blame somebody else. Now, that somebody else was part of government. That somebody else, I don't want to say was in the ruling party. I don't want to say that, because we are all in government. But the question is this.
Another thing, I'm sorry. So that the teacher can understand, and we must also understand, don't speak in parables. If we, when we say somebody else, you mean because the teacher says... Mr. Mazima was the premier at the time. That's when the decision was taken. I'm not sure if he was blaming Mr. Mazima, but he uses here to answer for himself.
Yeah, Chair, we've got to go back to the beginning there. I mean, on what basis was this done? And why was such an expensive system such as that, which would be the first in the country, why did that one to be introduced? And who's going to make the money? That's my second question. I mean, there are media reports that the bulk of the money that's going to come is going to go to this company that's operating these cameras and what have you. I mean, the whole tolling system. Is that a fact? How much is going to actually come back to SANRAL net profit out of the tolling of this road that will offset the loan that they have? That's a second question. The third question is, have Treasury and Cabinet not investigated alternate ways of funding? The fuel levy has just been increased, and next week we're going to pay more, or next month. To what extent is any of the money from the fuel levy going to be used to offset this loan that has been taken by SANRAL? So those are specific questions, Chairperson, that I'd like to ask for now. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Comrade Singh.
Chair, yes. The DA's position on this question is that we don't agree that there should be any tolling if there's not an alternative route. If there's an alternative route, then we say, and there's a new road built, you know, which improves the situation, traffic flow, etc., and, you know, people can use it if they want to, but they can also have an alternative route. And this is what where we have a problem with this specific toll road. But be that as it may, Chair, the fact of the matter is that road is built. It's there. The guarantees have been given. You know, know, we're not going to get away from it. It's there. So, whether it's going to be a once-off allocation or not is going to depend on a large degree on the success of the Kusatu riots today. Your friends and your whether the protests of motorists will come through or not, and what other thing worries us, Chair, is that other provinces are subsidizing Gauteng to actually pay for this 5.75 billion. But then, Chair, yesterday you made it very clear that you are from Gauteng. And I convinced the DA that as a result of that, we will support this bill, and that our chair comes from Gauteng and we need to support him, Shane. So that is our position, that we will support this. We are not certain that, as Honorable Singh says, there's not going to be further approaches to further subsidies, but let's play the ball when it's there. The problem is, the road has been built. This will go some way in alleviating the money that the motorist has to pay for this.
Thank you very much, Honorable Staff. But I'm sure Honorable Singh didn't say that they are not going to support the deal. Honorable Pamasaka?
Honorable Chair, just a few quick questions, DG. When was this, you mentioned a guarantee that was signed to back up Sandra's project in terms of borrowing. When was this guarantee entered into? And when was it signed in terms of this broker? And secondly, I want to understand the PMSA provision 30. It's written that it's motivated based on the section 30 of PMSA. And I have a view that that section is being stretched for this, because the issue about the targets and the budget, annual budget set, I'm not sure whether this particular instance is applicable, but I think that I have that view. In fact, I did make this view known last week that I think it's a stretching this. Now, I raised the question last week whether this was actually a bailout. And the answer was not quite bailout. Sandra did not want us to have this thing. Sandra was going with his own program to retrieve or to get money out of the motorists who drive through that particular road. Now the third, DG, you say this is once off because in the MTF, there's no provision made for this current expenditure or in the future. Now I just want to restate that. Is that for a fact that you say what is contained in the medium-term adjustment framework would not necessarily be elastic in the future for this reoccurrence? Because there are talks about Gauteng, there are talks about the Western Cape tolling system that Sandra has been speaking about. You can shake your head, Malia. Sandra, you can shake your head 100 times, Malia. Sandra is the authority of those roads, some of those roads. You have heard what the DG said earlier on. So the state forefront, DG, what's the understanding of the authority when they reclassified these roads, that the implications of this particular reclassification is going to actually mean what we are now seeing? I'm asking you these questions because I still believe that the public space, including the public roads, it's always the responsibility of the state. This is for responsibility of the state. Once you gravitate into privatization, you run the risk of what you see here. And I mean, this model is quite rife in the, of course, in the state of America, the American federal state. They do it because they generate money for themselves so that they are self-sufficient, this e-tolling system. So, you know, in the context of South Africa, so then the fourth thing is this, which is quite fundamental. The tolling, of course, is allowed and is agreeable when its construction does not necessarily provide or prohibit other alternatives. In this case, in Gauteng, for an example, this particular tolling, the main arterial is the one that has been tolled. So there is no other option to try and avoid it. You know, when you drive N1 out of Cape Town, you have the option to pay the tunnel or to go around the mountain because you don't want to pay that, you don't have to pay for it. And you must not be forced to do so. This one that we're talking about is different than that. So that's a fundamental problem that we have, if I want to state this quite clear for the record. Now, the unfortunate cost for Gauteng, I see the intervention of 5 billion rand, but the cost escalation, unmanageable cost escalation, is about to follow from this onwards. Because the managing of that is managed by an agency created by law, semi-private. It is going to determine the prices. So the cost that is going to be seen, that is not going to be seen today because of the intervention. That is why I'm asking whether this intervention and the MTF, the fact that you responded in that way, does it mean that it is not necessarily going to be, it's not elastic enough? Because I see this provision quite being elastic in this context of the Gauteng. The last question. Adjustments are done in a different way. Appropriation for adjustment are done, there's a time set for it in terms of government routine. Why wasn't it this issue? Yeah. No, I'm talking about the rules as it goes. Yeah. It's once a year, and that time is described that when it happens. It happens. Now, I'm asking the DG, Chair, I see you have interest interjecting on that point. The point I'm asking is this. Why I don't know if it's subtle. The question I want to ask DG is this. Why, if this is coming long, so long, and you do remember it is during the time of Mr. Shiloa and Gauteng, why is it that the adjustment of it is sponsored in a way that has been sponsored? Because I might add that clearly it was noticeable that it was an intervention that has not gone through the normal budgetary cycle. So why was it not picked up during the intervention of government in terms of the appropriation and brought in now in terms of, but still use it as a, put it as a retrospective in terms of the financial year? So those are the questions, Chair, later. And the DG, with respect, is the 20 or 30 cents that has been mentioned here, because on the explanatory memorandum, it doesn't quite clearly stipulate. When you read at the face of it, you can say, why worry about 66 rand
when actually you have to pay 30 cents. But if you don't read it, that the 30 cents may have to be calculated based on the kilometer travel or whatever, then it becomes very easy to say, well, this is it per kilometer or is it just 30 cents? And of course, the memorandum here and the piece of paper that I have, it just says 30 cents, 75 cents. And I did listen to your presentation, you did mention this. Now, is it per kilometers? Because I think then it gives you a difference, obviously a different perspective of the calculation of cost. And how many kilometers? You said 185 is done. How many of the kilometers outstanding that still has to follow more or less the same modus operandi, if you like, in Gauteng? How many?
The DG will respond. Yes, I've noticed. Yeah, my two eyes, they work very well for me, but I'm still sharing. I just want to understand the Honorable Ramathakana's question. He's saying, no, why did you decide to intervene now? Why don't you let people have them pay 60 cents? You didn't say that in so many ways, but I'm saying it. So I'm not sure whether that is the implications of your question, but I think that is the implications of your question. No, but the teacher maybe did not understand it my way. No. Let's allow Honorable Steve.
No, thank you. No, thanks, Chair. Thanks, DG, for the presentation. That maybe is a question of education for me, teacher here. The first one, maybe you have addressed, you will pardon me if you have addressed this because I was deployed somewhere first before I came here. But quickly, the question is, I'm trying to find out the difference here between the state guarantee provided by Treasury and the bond market, which people bought from SANRA. I mean the distinction there, because linked to that will be the question why there was a need. If SANRA could raise the bond, maybe you're using their own balance sheet, why was the need then for a state guarantee? Why SANRA did not go to the market without the state guarantee? That's why I'm saying this is will be an educational kind of, or a free lecture for me to understand this thing. That is the first point. But again, it's also related to Chairperson. If what would be the implications of Treasury not releasing this 5.75 billion? What will be the implications? Because here you spoke to in one paragraph here by the mitigation factors in relation to the fact that you also mentioned that there was an issue of downgrading by Moody's to Baa1, because this has some kind of uncertainty. Now, what would then mean to the state that downgrading of an agency of the state what will then overall, will that mean, remember I said earlier, suppose we don't pay up with this 575 as we are required to pay to the investors, then what would then that mean in terms of that downgrading of Sanral? What would that mean to this, to the state? But I'm trying to find out from you, DG. I know you had to be, because you provided that debt guarantee as a treasurer on behalf of the state. What is the role here of Department of Transport? Because my understanding is that SANRAL is an agent, is an implementing agent, if you like, of transport. What is their role here? Why we don't see maybe an effort to their own budget? That is transport. Transport that is to try and come to the party. If I mean maybe to provide another additional 1 billion, if you like. And I said with humility, this will be a lesson, an economic lesson for me, so I can engage further, having been informed by this reality. Thanks, Chair.
I hope that honourable members we have asked our questions because the PG, maybe I omitted to mention from the beginning, the PG didn't mention that he was supposed to be at the same meeting with the minister, but out of respect, he had to come to us. So he was supposed to join the meeting at 11 o'clock, am I right? At least by that time. So that's why I'm just requesting that if there are any questions, we do them now, so that they can respond.
Let me just start with something which I suspect could be misconstrued or twisted. The mention of Mr. Shula was just a marker in terms of time, full stop. Nothing more, nothing less. It was never intended to say but even in that context, at least I want it on record, that it was just a mention of time, so that it's understood. In fact, there is no reason to blame anyone for this stuff, in my understanding. You just have to digest it and sort of say what the lesson is. But let me deal with all the questions to the extent that I understood them. The 5.75 billion is meant to be a once-off contribution that national government makes. It is the rest of the things that have been mentioned about discounts, inflation-related increases, of tariffs and stuff like that, then take account of everything. In other words, with the 5.75 billion, the tariffs, estimated traffic volumes, the anticipation is that somebody will be able to deal with this load in it and have. So full stop, it solves the thing. That's the idea. Now, the issue of other roads and whether the government assists. I was hinting that there may be useful lessons to learn from this experience, which are transferable to other places. In other words, to look at what are the different models for financing similar roads going forward, which take into account everything that we have learned from this one, to make sure that reasonable people don't end up resisting toll roads, for instance, without also undermining the use of the user pay principle where it makes sense to use it, because it's a very important way to finance infrastructure. Now, many please, let me tackle those questions at the same time. The way the Sandal guarantee is structured, I had actually said that on a standalone basis, if Sandal had raised the 19 billion, the interest rate they would have paid on the 19 billion would have been 0.7% more. It's not Mickey Mouse over 30 years. It's a lot of money. So because investors would not have had the comfort that in the event that something goes wrong, they would get their money back. So they would have priced that risk in the interest rate that they charge from Sandra. So the one of the considerations for giving the guarantee was that already, in fact, built in this tariff is the fact that the cost of borrowing for somebody is lower. In other words, we would have been talking higher tariffs than the ones we're talking about if the road had been done without the bond. That's the first one. Maybe it was supposed to be the second one, because the first one is that it is also conceivable that any lender would have looked at Sandal and say they are out of their mind. They want to take so much debt. They have never done it before. Will they be able to pay it? So the road may not have been there. We wouldn't have been talking today about this issue. But of course, the congestion would have been there. You know, the inefficiencies of that road would have continued, and all the attendant problems associated with that. Now, the law, the guarantee was approved, I think, 2008, 2009, thereabout. But it's not very hard to check that and confirm it more accurately. The law, and this is contained in the Money Bills Amendment Procedure Act, that we've got to publish our contingent liabilities. And there's a table there. It's quite transparent. We make the table. We say these are the guarantees to the following institution. The total, for instance, for if you take that ESCOM, the total for ESCOM would be 350 billion, of which I know I happen to remember they have drawn down 130 billion. So at this stage, there is still an amount that they can still borrow against. But for now, it's 170 billion that they have borrowed. So we publish that information, it's transparent. The law empowers the Minister of Finance on his own to take the decisions for guarantee. And they're given as the institutions come. My colleague here has ably shown me the table in the event that you want on page 73 of the budget review. So it's set out. It's not something that's done hidden somewhere. It's published. Now, on the implications of not, and the honourable member is right. I answered that question before it was asked, but I can repeat. There's no harm if you have missed it. If someone doesn't pay one instalment, then government have to pay the full 19 billion immediately. Now, I must say, most people tend to think that government has got a lot of money. Let me explain something that people here without sounding like I'm patronizing people. When the minister stands up and says that we're going to spend 1.1 trillion this year, there is no 1.1 trillion in the bank. That is built on the hope that people will pay taxes, the economy will grow, you know, to the extent that there is a deficit. When we go out to the market to borrow, which we do this year, we borrow 10 billion a week, right, also for cash management. It's built on the understanding that all of those things will work. On any given day, I can tell you how much money is in the bank. It's never close to a trillion. So, to get 20 billion when it's needed in one day would be a mammoth task. I actually think that it would almost be impossible. So it's not a find yourself in, where you've got to pay that much. And by the way, which answers the other question about rating agencies, immediately that happens for one entity, that the entity fails to pay, then investors will extend that to all the guarantees and say, my God, these people can stuff things, can get things wrong. Therefore, we are not safe with Eskom, we are not safe with the other one. Answering yet the other question, why now? You see, this has to happen now, because if it doesn't happen, I mean, every month that you add to the repayment period adds interest, so you pay more. So the timing of this becomes important. Look, there's no profit in this stuff. I think there was a question about people making profits and stuff like that. Now, on the alternative routes, the R55 and R101 are alternatives. Now, what we acknowledge, all of us, I've not come across anyone who denies that they are not yet good alternatives. That if you go to R55, the part that passes, for instance, west of Pretoria, it's under there's some major construction work happening. So it's going to be improved. The same is going to happen in R101. The Southern Province has undertaken to step up its maintenance allocation, because those roads fall under them. So they will do that to make them real kind of alternative. But that doesn't mean that the roads don't exist, by the way. They exist. They are drivable now. I've put them on them myself. But they are not as good as the NTC, which is understandable, because if the one is going to be for free, it can't be the same as the one for which you pay. I mean, it would be counterintuitive to have that. Now, the issue of whether this belongs, as an adjustment, as far as I can remember, Honorable Mushakan, there is no prescription in law in terms of the timing of adjustment and how many you can do. It is just that, as a matter of course, so that people don't think that they have tabled a budget now, but we know they will change it tomorrow. A budget for them means nothing. We have tended to defer them and concentrate them in one period, which is October. By the way, what you see reflected in October is an outcome of indirection from any time from now. Mrs. Honorable Bonu would know that when provinces have underspent in 1 year and withhold the money, they start the negotiations to get it back and have it reflected in their government budget. In fact, they even go as far as to say, in order for us to be able to use the money and not underspend, would you give us some sense of comfort that you will recommend to Parliament that we get this money so that we can continue construction, use the money we have in the knowledge that we'll get this one. So it's not it's almost an everyday occurrence. Of course, this time, it has had to happen because at one stage when the toll roads were conceived of, no one anticipated that there would be the kind of resistance that there was, that the economic situation would have been as different as it is. I mean, if you think about it, people may have felt that they could afford this a while back, but now, with all the changes that there have been in the economy and so on, they feel they need some assistance, and that's what government is trying to deal with. The reclassification of roads was intended to help. It was premised on the traffic volume, the importance of the roads for the country. So the understanding was that certain roads left, say, the provinces and municipalities may not be of the standard that's required to ensure that they play the role that they are supposed to play in the economy. So they got reclassified. And by the way, it's quite a number of them. I can't remember the kilometers from the top of my head, but it was many, not just in South, in other parts of the country as well. My colleague here says that national roads increased as a result of that reclassification from
understand the other roads elsewhere as well, but through different mechanisms, as we benefited from the expertise that's there and stuff like that as a country. The roads that are affected by this in Gauteng is 560, if you minus 185, if I can still do arithmetic, I think I left with 275. So that has been done. The note is not quite misleading. The stem or the main sentence says a reduction per kilometer cost is payable. So the 30 cents is per kilometer, not just 30 cents or something like that. The relationship between, I think I've answered a bit, Honorable Member, but let me just explain the one tail end that I didn't explain. What happens with an entity like Sunbelt, if it's borrowing on the back of guarantees, that the guarantee gets given, the terms of the guarantee are spelled out. Like I'm saying now, that if they fail to pay one installment, government has got to send you or to step in and pay. What that then does is to enable Sunbelt to go into the market. I think they used to do this once or twice a month. Can't remember the number of times that they would do an auction. They issue a bond, let's say, of about 500 million. People buy the bond. And I've indicated the issue of risk. If they think that it's a high risk bond, they usually ask for a higher interest. If it's low risk, if it's too much risk, it's like you're buying something today which tomorrow will be worth nothing. They don't buy it at all. In fact, this is where, and people miss it, this is where we are almost with Sunbelt. I actually think that this is actually something that people forget. Sunbelt has had to cancel its auctions. It has had to stop issuing instruments, in other words, borrowing money. Because no one wanted to lend Sunbelt money, because they say, but you don't have the revenue stream to repay the money. Why should I give you money knowing that you're not going to pay it back? Because you don't have toll fees. You're debating whether there should be toll fees or not. So as a result of that, they have been had. And any delay in this guarantee, in this making this 5.75 billion available to them, not only will it add to interest, but it will mean that they are not able to borrow. And the day might just come, actually, sooner rather than later, where they are unable to pay interest on their bonds, and therefore government may face the reality of having to pay 19 billion instead of 5.75 which it has. Yeah, and they are the similar zone. No, thank you very much.
I asked for him because I remember I said that he's got up to 11. That's quick.
Thanks, Chief. Thanks, DG. I'm not sure if I heard you correctly to say that with National Roads Agency, they used to look after 6,000 kilometers, now they're looking after 16,000.
And by the way, Sunbelt is 100% owned by the state. So there's no giving roads to Sunbelt is not privatizing them. It's just using an agency to deliver the roads, which we have created as government because we thought it would work better. And I must say, it actually does work. It may cost some money. It does work because they build the roads. In fact, provinces and municipalities, some of them have used them for building their roads and contracted them.
Kamalakani, why some bombs too?
Well, honourable members, I think that we have raised the question with National Treasury. I guess we're satisfied, and when I start saying SDA,
had no problem with the beam itself. I'm sure the questions that we were outstanding, that's why I was asking Honorable Singh to ask those questions openly, so that we don't come back and say there are still questions that are hanging out there. But clearly, it's not a small matter. I mean, as people were saying, that there are implications, even the PG says that there are lessons that have been drawn for those other roads where there's a thinking of trolling them. But for now, the committee says this is a once-off decision that was taken to assist the public there. I see a lot of questions a lot of answers are in the memorandum. I read something that it was a response to concerns raised by the public, amongst others. I think it's Section 11 or whatever, but I think that there are answers there. There may not be all the answers. I mean, all the time we think about certain things that could have been raised. But so far, I think will it be a clear, what you call, understanding if I say to the DG, we satisfied for now? Honorable Singh, no scope, please.
No. Chair, no. I can say we note the response. I note the responses of the DG. There are follow up questions. For example, the DG said there's no profit. And you know, we are people from the ground. We read. And when the media suggests that a company from outside is going to be making profits on the systems and things like that, and maybe Sandral is not making profit, but here there's a profit. Now, we don't have clarity on that kind of thing, because it's something that will still hang. The public out there, or the media, would say, as they've said here, media investigation suggests that the majority shareholding of the toll collection company, Electronic Toll Collection, is held by Kapsch Traffic. I think that's owned by, I don't know, Mr. Swart. Cox Traffic Com AB. No doubt this company is a profit-making entity. I'm reading from a document that I have. So now when he says there's no profit, now, you know, I mean, the assertion is that companies from outside South Africa are going to take away a lot of money that's going to arise from the income. Now, maybe we need to talk about it at some other time. But when he says no profit, it's...
Our main issue today, I understood it to be this intervention of the 575, whether it's going to be done in future, and we have got a response in that. I agree with you, there might be many other questions that they might arise relating just to e-tolling as e-tolling, which are not necessarily related to this adjustment view that we're talking about. So that is why I'm proposing that now, I'm putting a question now, that are we adopting this additional adjustment appropriation deal, D62112? Honorable Sarp has inadvertently proposed that SGA, they have no problem. Honorable Sikho? Where the ANC is second? Honorable Singh?
Chairperson, my current mandate is to say no. We object. However, position may change by the time the debate is on, after having received the information from the Director General, which I will share with my caucus tomorrow. But for now, our position is that we object.
I'm not sure why we have to declare.
Okay. You're right, Honorable Matagana, because the bill has been The proposal to adopt has been raised and seconded. Yeah. So, Sichi, you are a witness. Well, thank you very much for coming, Sichi. Thank you very much, honorable members. We have adopted the bill. I don't know if you want 2 minutes.
Jay, you've noted our objection. Thank you.
No, it's been noted, but no, it's noted. It's noted, but your objection seems to be on the fence, you know, subject to continuous negotiation. I like the skills, honorable sir. You keep on eating at the last minute. I don't know, other members, we can continue if you want to have 2 minutes. But the problem is that let's have a 5 minutes then break. Then. Sorry? Sarkom, you want to speak on the matter?
Chairperson, when must this document be available for the people who come here? Before 12 or what? 34. So we have time.
Thank you very much. Now, thank you. Well, it looks like that nobody needs this break, no? Oh, you need this, Marissa? Okay, it's fine. 5 minutes.
That was closed from this morning.